Good evening, everyone. It's Wednesday night and it's 7 o'clock. And tonight we're working our way through the ABD guidebook by E.J. Gold. And we've been working on it now for how many weeks again?
42.
This is our 42nd week.
42 weeks.
And we're employing what's called a slow reading process. And the reason is because it's worth it. Okay? And so anyway, tonight, what we're doing is we're advancing through the Books of the Dead, which is the center part of this particular volume. And right now, we've made our way to Book 12. And as is the case with all the books up to this time, each of the books are, there's two parts. There's two distinct parts to each of the books.
Okay.
They're bilateral. They're, what's a good word?
Duplex.
They're duplex. Okay. But there's two distinct parts. And the first part tells about the particular name of the book, and then the second part goes into the voyage and a particular place in the voyage that the voyager is at.
Mm-hmm.
And the particular names of the book follow part of the 99 names of God as depicted in the Muslim work, you know, in this case, 99 names of Allah. And so each one that is interesting is that each one is an attribute of the divine Godhead, so to speak. And the Godhead, of course, is infinite, but it has many attributes which are able to be manifested and depicted in by humans, and that we can pick up. Those are ones that we can pick up, that we're able to pick up. And so we're going to read the first verse only, because that's where the break is, if you recall, Ivan.
Right.
We're going to read that. And we're going to spend a few minutes on that first verse, and we're going to tour through that, and then we're going to also tour what I consider to be a little bit of an interesting companion piece in the ABD. And you might want to get your books out for the ABD as well. We're going to be looking at Chamber 46. But Ivan, why don't you just read us through the first verse then?
Okay, the 12th. Book of the Dead, called the Book of Ul-Wahhab. 1. I am he who gives without thought of compensation or selfish interest. Only I who need nothing can give without limit in this way.
So what caught my attention, and I sent an email out about it, and the whole thing that caught my attention was this idea of giving.
Mm-hmm.
And there's two sides of giving. There's giving and then there's the receiving of it. Both sides of that are a uniquely dynamic event. They're dynamic. I don't know that we have the ability to give without expectations. This is a very difficult thing to do. Some years ago, I did a number of, this is when I was down in Southern California working with Coyote, and we were doing this sweat lodge. And you know, you get the picture how it's dark in there, and there's a circle of people like sitting like statues, you know, in focus and their attention. And the keeper of the space was George, and he turns, and he just happens to say to me in the middle of this dark, after we've been sitting there for an hour, he says, "Can you tell us about prayer?" And when I started talking about prayer, the thing that struck me was that there's this whole cycle of prayer. And, you know, the lowest form, of course, is I pray for personal success.
Mm-hmm.
You know, gosh, I hope this works out, so I have a lot of money. I hope my son gets into Harvard or Yale and or Princeton. I hope this happens. I hope, you know, all we're very, very worldly. Mm-hmm. And so that's a very quid pro quo, right? I'm willing to pray to God in order to get a Cadillac.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's self-serving.
It's totally self-serving, and as Janis Joplin says, Lord, why don't you give me a color TV?
Mm-hmm.
My friends all drive Porsches.
Or it's the Mercedes-Benz.
Mercedes-Benz.
Yeah, right.
And so she's hip to that whole thing.
Yeah.
And so you look at prayer like that, and you say, well, the monks are the ones that pray properly, right? You go, oh, yeah, these monks in these Christian monastic things. And then you get into another kind of materialism, and maybe this is what was pointed when Chögyam wrote his book. There's a spiritual materialism that involves, and a person prays because then God will like him. You're praying because you're supposed to, and therefore you're going to get pennies in heaven. It's the same thing, right? So is it possible to pray or to without expecting recompense? Is it possible to stand in the place where you can actually give and pray in that manner without expectation of return? And what would it be like if you were in that position? So this guy here, this, what's his name again?
El-Wahab.
He's saying, I can, right? Mm-hmm. He's waving his big flag and he says, I can do that. Now, why is it that he can do that, Ivan?
And only I, who need nothing, can give without limit in this way. I mean, I think this is a little bit beyond the human realm to say, sure, I can get... This guide who needs nothing can give endlessly. So, okay. But, I mean, now I'm trying to remember a saying of E.J. Gold's neighbors, I think, which might come from W.C. Fields or something, which is, if you're not hungry, you can't be had. it's a little different way of
expressing in a third way,
the same
can,
thing.
Yeah.
Saying that, you know, in the human realm, if, yeah, say it again. You cannot cheat an honest man.
That's W.C. Fields, not this other one.
Oh well, yeah. If you're not hungry, you can't be had. It's like saying you know nobody can con you or nobody can lure you or seduce you or whatever if you're not wanting, if you're not hungry for something, you're not feeling a lack.
So when we look and we see how utterly hungry we are for approval from our superiors, for instance, mm-hmm. or our clients or our friends. We want them to say, oh, I really like your new car. Oh, you're really something. You have such a nice new car. And then you go, oh, me. I have a new car.
Mm-hmm.
I. And this is a different thing here, though. So... You know, and I start thinking about that, and I think, wow, my gosh, you know, what does it mean that you get something? What does it mean to get something given with nothing in expectation? I have a business. I give my services. People give me money.
It's right.
That's how it works. I do this. They give me money. Answer, Ivan.
The answer. That's the question. So, how to do this?
Well, the answer to that is to observe yourself. Mm-hmm. So when you're giving something to another, watch what goes on in you. Or if you're getting something. Now, the something that we're talking about here is either tangible or intangible. And if it's intangible, then it might be something like a... what do you call it when you approve on somebody? You know, a compliment. You might get a compliment. Can you receive a compliment with true objectivity? Can you just allow it to just, okay?
Mm-hmm. But then isn't that receiving? That's receiving that, without expectation?
Can you receive it without expectation as well?
Mm-hmm.
So the exercise I think that all Wahab is giving us is to, what is this whole gift-giving mechanism? What does it look like? You know, like the image that I have in the email was manna from heaven.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the idea of manna from heaven is replete in the Bible, of course. And the idea is that it just shows up.
Like the saying that there's abundance, that the world is abundant, or the world is fruitful, or the world is nurturing, or something like that.
That's right. Well,
you know, what about the idea of random acts of kindness? Wouldn't that be something like what?
So I was walking to a meeting in Nevada City a few days ago,
mm-hmm.
and I parked my car and I'm walking down the street. Sidewalk, and there's a guy, as you know, the infinite number of musicians that we have up here, and he's pulling his case out of some sort from his truck, and his truck bed is, you know, it's, I don't know, 2.5-3 feet off the ground, and this thing looked pretty damn heavy, and he's by himself, and I thought, how's he going to get it down? So I stopped. And I said, do you need a hand?
Right.
He said, wow, that would really help.
Nice.
So I reached out, and the two of us lifted the thing down, and I had put it on the ground, and he had wheels, and he took off.
Mm-hmm.
So I had no forethought when I began the action. I'm walking down the road. I see the guy, and he's just doing this, and it was no big thing. It was just like, yeah.
Right.
Right. Well,
I would call that a random act of kindness.
After that, and he, you know, he thanked me, and but after that, I couldn't stop patting myself on the back for how cool I was, right?
So you did get a reward for that act of kindness.
Yeah, it was like I still have a sore arm from patting myself so much. Okay.
Well, it serves you right.
Immediate karma, right? So, like, I couldn't let it go.
Yeah.
I couldn't just do it. I had to carry it with me. I was carrying the whole damn thing, right, the nun. And so I guess that we can discover a little bit about giving and receiving. But to me, these books are a chance to observe ourselves in action under these attributes of these particular segments of God, you know, these attributes of God. And this guy is like, I give with no expectation. Wow. That just blows my mind that you can do that.
Yeah, right.
The reason it blows my mind is I can almost see it. Okay? My intuition can almost, I can grasp it intellectually, but that's not what I mean. I can almost see what it would be like to give with absolutely simplicity and be done with it at that moment. And I was talking, this is years ago, I don't even remember the context now, but I was talking, actually EJ was in the room at the time, we were talking about something, and I think it was a charitable contributions, and I was talking to him about the idea of that a gift given is a gift completed. There's no more to it, and then the donative intent is complete.
Okay.
And
can you
so
say that again?
Is a gift completed? You're done. You've given it. Can you be done with it, or do you have like these little strings attached?
The event is over.
You know.
Yeah.
You're like a little string that you walk along. I seem to.
Okay.
But sometimes you can let it go also. And I guess that's what I'm talking about. I think that's the gift that we're given here. And then there's a whole other set of gifts. Are we okay over there on the chat? Is there anybody? Yeah. Okay. And there's another set of gifts that has happened. And I'm just throwing that out, like a whole other realm of gifts. And even though it's vague, I don't think I could be more vague, but it's pretty vague what I'm saying. And I'm going to put Silverdale on the spot. Are you still there? Did you hear
I
that?
I am here with wondering.
Aha, good, wondering. It's a lovely place to be. So many years ago, I was born. And in that event, it took many years after that to realize I was also given something. I was given freely, in a sense. I was given the divine spark, George, which you've talked about so many times.
Yeah.
That was, I didn't even want to say I own it. It's just there, right? It's just there. We're blessed with the divine spark.
It's an integral part of who we are.
It's an integral part of who we are, he says.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so, and once you discover that, it's like, where'd that come from? I didn't do anything to make it there. I've done a little bit to allow it to breathe a little bit, right, George?
Yeah. Awaken it, cultivate it, nurture it, grow it, develop it, become it.
And become it, because the gift, this is the gift of great value.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking about the Bible earlier. This is the gift of great value. I don't know if that's
the pearl of great
price. Pearl of great value.
The pearl of great price. Yeah.
Of great price. That we were given, and thus we have it. And then when we begin to discover what has been given to us, and this is the thing that just scares the bejeebers out of me.
Mm.
And I don't know why it bothers me, frightens me so much, but when I sense what's been given to me, I get frightened. Why do I get frightened?
Next question.
Marvette's over there saying, what are you supposed to do with it? And that's the point. It's like, what are you supposed to do with it?
We have a comment from Ellen Tisdale. She asks, yes, is it love or business / trade?
Hi, Ellen. Good to see your name show up and to hear it. That's right. And, I mean, if it is a trade, it is not a gift freely given. And can we give in that manner? Boy, that's a great exercise to work with. But I guess I want to go back to myself, because I'm mostly mostly thinking about myself most
of
the time.
You're definitely the expert.
Well, actually, no.
No?
That's part of the problem.
Oh, you're supposed to be the expert.
I'm working on it.
All right.
Everybody else is an expert on me.
Before you go there. Before you go, you know, I thought the next thing you were going to say was something about, okay, if this divine spark is a gift that's been
mm-hmm.
given to us, is that a gift that's given without any expectation of return? Or do we know that?
Al-Wahhab is telling us yes.
Yeah.
Without Why is, once again, you have to look, why is, can he say that? I have.
I who need nothing.
I who need nothing is thoroughly and totally complete. And he said, here.
Okay, well, I thought maybe you were going to open up this question of whether there's something that needs us to do something about this divine spark.
Well, I don't know that it's a personalized need. It's just a fact of existence, and you do something with it, or you don't do something with it, and that's okay too. Not preferred. I don't think there's a will that's sitting there saying, gosh, I hope Ivan gets enlightened this time, because then that really helped me out.
Yeah.
I don't think that goes on. I think there's just existence, and there's up and down, success and not success. Yeah. Boom.
I think EJ has often said, there's no hurry. You have lifetimes and lifetimes, and you either use it or you don't. There's no judgment there. It's just, you know.
You know what I think, Marvette, and that the more I think I hide from my, when I say I hide from myself, I'm hiding from that divine spark. And the more I come to this class on Wednesday nights, which I don't know why they keep having it on Wednesday nights, but I keep showing up, and then this same question comes up over and over again.
Mm.
What are you doing with your divine spark?
Indeed.
Another thing that EJ has often told us is if you just hang in there, that it's really all about hanging in there, and so you coming and continuing to come every Wednesday night is a habit,
you know,
to be useful for you.
I asked Lee Loswick about 30 years ago. I'm sitting there in Boulder, California, Colorado, and he has these midnight events. Something of Madness or the...
I'll remember it. All
you remember that, Marvette, too. You know, where...
Tavern
of something.
The tavern of...
Whatever, it was wonderful.
Love and Oblivion or something.
Well, it wasn't that, but it was like you get there at midnight is when it started or some darn thing. And I'm already, I'd met EJ, and I'm all like about to... I sold my practice and at a great loss, and I sold it. I'm going to come out here and live in California. And I said to Lee Loswick, I said, well, you know what? He said to me, EJ said, why don't you come out and be my accountant? That was one of the things that EJ says. And I said to Lee, I said, what does that mean? I already am doing accounting here in Colorado. That was my business. So why would it, you know, what is it, what's the difference? So I'm going to go do accounting in Northern California. And he goes, ah, but you're going to be doing it there. So what was significant is that you're doing it within the context, not what you're doing. And the context and what we're doing it is we're doing it within the context of a school, and we're letting it operate and all those influences, and we put our finger in it and stir the pot every once in a while.
Well, wouldn't you say that what you're doing might look the same, it may look very much the same, but you changed your life.
I'll tell you what, it doesn't look the same from this point of view.
Well,
it looks the same from out there.
You changed your life. I mean, you didn't just change your location.
I did.
You changed your life.
I did.
Yeah. But you're still accounting.
I'm still accounting. I'm starting to look at real estate in Boulder again. But that'll never happen. I'm not going to move. I can't see myself moving from here ever. Ken and Tony asked Pat that question, why are you still here after 40 years? And there's no why answer to that. She just is here. Pat, who's become a spectacular expert at the Voyager And so, yeah, I think you're right, Norbert. You just hang in there. Maybe, and that's what he said. He says, all you need to do is just stay. Whatever happens, just stay one more day, one more mm-hmm. year, one more month. And if you do, maybe that's all we can do. Maybe that's all I can do. I don't maybe have a skill set to do anything else, but I think I can do that. My Chinese astrology sign is the ox, and it feels really right. Like, you know, an ox that just doesn't know anything, but it just plots along, and out of the mud, and one foot goes down, and the next one, it's got a big burden, it's got carrying this stuff. That's what I feel like often.
All right.
The ox. Big, yeah, like a big bull, like a big giant, you know, with those big horns, you know, like that. The ox. I am.
You have to do it.
And I'm trying to. I wish sometimes my humanness truly would like to offload it, but I'm compelled by its beauty to retain it. How do you like that one?
I usually picture an ox with a yoke on it pulling something.
Yeah.
And usually a plow, which means that you're leaving some kind of a trail behind.
But it feels like. Okay. And sometimes the soil's quite rocky, but I move ahead anyway. I feel like I have that big hoof thing that, you know,
a big hoof thing.
What is that thing called? You know, splat.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, that's the whole thing I'm giving. But I wanted to revisit something that we touched on a few weeks ago, George, on this idea of, in my opinion, it's associated with this idea of getting a gift. And it's this idea that we touched on, many lifetimes, one goal. Do you remember this?
I do.
Yeah. And at the time we visited it, it's the same thing. It's I've been given this gift, and as Marvette says, I'm gonna just keep with it as much as I can, and there's no rush. But this lifetime, this is what I'm doing with it. And I wanted to revisit that just a second, because it's in that context for me as well. And I was wondering if we could take a look at Chamber 46, and I think it starts with the second paragraph, and I'm going to ask Marvette if she would read that two paragraphs for us on the phone, please, Dan. So if you have your ABD, get it out, please. Chamber 46. And let's take a look at that together. So listen carefully now.
Chamber 46. This is directed to the beings of this Wednesday evening assembly. I'll focus my attention in the following way to guide my thoughts. I will be born as a being in the line of the teaching, within the school of the teaching, and work in the teaching for the good of all sentient beings everywhere. I will take birth in a father, I'll give you that again. I will take birth with a father and mother who are embodiments of the labyrinth guide and who are within the realm of the practice of the teaching. I will take a biological machine with merits and grace, which can be used for the benefit of all sentient beings. I will practice the teaching in my new birth, and during that lifetime, I will perfect myself toward liberation, so that all beings everywhere might benefit from my liberation in the next labyrinth voyage. I will not die again unprepared for liberation. I'll concentrate fully on this intention, which will open a suitable womb. Immediately upon entering such a special womb, I should sanctify it and treat it as a temple dedicated to the Beloved, who is myself as the clear light. I'll ask the Beloved to transmit the teaching to me during that lifetime. It's within my power and right to direct the actions of the Beloved in bringing about my liberation. That's what the Beloved is there for. But I have to ask for it before it will come about. I will be sure to ask. This completes the excerpt from the 46th chamber directed to the beings of this assembly. May this be used for the benefit of all beings everywhere.
Keep it open. Keep it open. So it says something about, I will, something about selecting something with merit and grace. What did it say?
A human biological machine, it said.
That was the phrase that on that meeting, that we had at the beginning of January on the topic.
That you were looking
for. That I was looking for to remind us that we have the ability to ask for that and receive it.
Do we, what does that mean? Does this make any sense at all to you, George? I mean, we're sitting there in the middle of the labyrinth. We're voyagers. We can select. How do you select a human biological machine with merit and grace? Aren't they all just the same?
Boy, David, I heard you ask me that question, and I guess I want to just offer some comments that are at a tangent in terms of what we're discussing now, but might provide a larger context for us. As I read this chapter, I can't help but feel that we see this whole chapter embodied in the work of EJ. So naturally, my experience and involvement with EJ is very circumscribed because I live at a distance and I telecorrespond, unlike somebody like Marvette, who's with him every single day and has been for 40 years. But, you know, what each of us is attempting to do is to become the example that EJ is setting for us. So what all of us are awed by in EJ, maybe I should only speak for myself and others might hear some resonance in this. What awes me about EJ is the phenomenal inspiration and creativity and energy and intelligence that is shown through his artistic productions going back from the very beginning, books and videos and music and art and Bardo Town and even the ICWs today. Here is a being who is giving from the vast well of beingness in a creative form while simultaneously having to deal with the daily affairs of ordinary life. You know, we do have to pay the mortgage and eat and any number of other things as well. And sometimes perhaps we're confused by what we think is a contradiction between those two, this phenomenal, powerful beingness that EJ seems to manifest in accordance really with this verse 1, I am he who gives without thought of compensation or selfish interest. So I might have a lot of criticisms of EJ, but you know, in the 15, 20 years I've known him, I've never felt like he was seeking compensation or selfish interest for himself. He was just very generously giving of what was natural to him. Only I who need nothing can give without limit in this way. Okay, so now having presented my illustration of what... Oh, and by the way, EJ also is this blood-drinking guide who can be an extremely frightening... In his, not his, I don't know if EJ makes demands, but, you know, he certainly compels us to aspire to something more than whatever we're doing and tolerate whatever outburst of reactions he might be demonstrating, whether intentional or unintentional. I'm not in a position to judge that. And so all of this, I present that as an illustration of what we ourselves are attempting to do, which is we enter into this work in this particular lifetime as conditioned individuals. We are involuntary slaves to stimulation and reactions in every moment of the whole of our life, from our first breath to our last one, from the moment of our conception to our last breath. And what we see in EJ, and what we're, although it's hard for us to see it initially, is this other end of the spectrum, what Gurdjieff would call prime source material. It is the divine within us. It's the particle of divinity within us that it's the Voyager within us, comprised of solely the clear light. And then what we attempt in our evolutionary transformational efforts is to blend these two together, and EJ seems to somehow blend those, he doesn't seem to, but EJ blends those two together for better or for worse. And so when we get to finally when we get to this chamber 46, I don't know if this really does refer from this lifetime we're living at the beginning of the 21st century, and our next lifetime might be in the middle of the 22nd century, or if this is actually referring to the many lives we might live in the course of a single day as our ordinary personality changes according to the whatever circumstances we are in. We're walking down the street, a guy needs help with his musical instrument, we stop, you've just been born. And the question is, are you doing that out of your conditioning, your involuntary slavery, or are you doing that out of this beingness which, like, that just kind of flows out almost without thought? I don't want to say EJ does things without thought, but something seems to
flow
from
him. I think you definitely can say it without thought in the traditional way we can think of mentation.
Right.
I think there's a movement of his essential self that moves
right.
without.
That's right, and owing to a law such as magnetism, there's something magnetic in that presence that actually rubs off on us and awakens us. And so, actually, you know, the three parts of enlightenment are: first, we have to awaken our essential self.
Yeah.
Once our essential self is awakened, then we learn to die to our conditioning, and then we can intentionally be reborn during the course of a day or during the course of this lifetime, and then become something, a being of higher at a higher gradation. So anyway, sorry to eat up so much time, but
no, fine. But I think as voyagers, we have to look at that. I really appreciate this idea. Either it's recurrence, where we die and are reborn,
right,
and we select a human biological machine with merit and
grace. Chamber 46.
Chamber 46. Or maybe it's every single day, all day long as we recall the fact that we have selected a being that has merit and grace, and then we move from that position. So as voyagers, we must remember both of these things. Both of these things. Now, in that context, we've talked a lot about giving and the concept of giving and this idea of selecting this subsequent lifespan. And then, now, because it's so short, we're going to read the rest of this little book.
Okay.
And listen to the difference. Listen to the next part.
Wahab 2. And on the ninth day, the form of the blood-drinking guide will appear to you. Now you must recognize him also as the form of primal consciousness, and do not fear him. 3. And if you recognize the violent guide as one of the five elemental forms of consciousness, then you will not become afraid, and you shall be lifted up, and you shall not be cast down by them into the world of matter. 4. And by recognizing them, you shall attain your liberation, but he who becomes afraid of them attracts them to him, and they shall cast him down. And he who forgets the life in spirit, he shall be thrown down, and he shall be trod upon and torn to shreds, for he has forgotten the everlasting life in spirit.
For he has forgotten the everlasting life in spirit.
There's an invitation to self-remembering, if I ever heard it.
And to remember that we are a being born of merit and grace. And we are a being born of merit and grace. This is what is given to us, is this opportunity, as we manifest. So as we walk the earth, we're going to leave wherever we are, and we're going to meet tomorrow. We're going to go walk the earth in a different, unique way. And I guarantee you, if we can walk the path called, oh yeah, I remember, I am a being filled with merit and grace.
And David, I just want to again remind us of what the first sentence says, that I will be born as a being in the line of the teaching. So as we look at ourselves and where we are presently in our contemporary circumstances, we discover that apparently we had that intention when we came into this life, and we've ended up with a father who I might regard to be EJ, and a mother in the form of this school. And it's
right,
the blending of these two together, working with others and then working with a teacher, a mother and a father, so to speak, that provides us the teaching in this lifetime. And of course, both of those things embody the labyrinth guide, and apparently we all have a biological machine with merit and grace from previous lifetimes in the single quest of acquiring personal beingness.
And here's the, for me, once again, here's the little shocker. for whatever reason, we have wound up in this school, however you got here. So your selection process, whether it was in Oregon and by way of Arkansas, or whether it was Chicago via Boulder, or even Nova Scotia, which nobody lives in Nova Scotia, by way of Vancouver, and then here you are, or weird places like France, and other such strange things. Here you are. Each selection process, we don't know how it's going to manifest day by day in life, but here you are. So as we reflect back, reflect, you made a choice. Here's the results of your choice. Not bad. Right?
Sure.
I mean, this is pretty cool. We're here, we're now, and we're manifesting. We made it this far, and as Marvette's teaching us, just hang on, hang in there. That's all you can do. Hang in there. Okay?
You know, and David, I just want to just throw in one little of those tidbits from the Fourth Way teaching, which is the idea of magnetic centers, you know, an individual according to their temperament and their nature, may perhaps their previous lifetimes, develop a certain magnetic center that will have a tendency to draw them in a given direction. Apparently, all of us are fanatical about this particular way, and we've been magnetized to EJ, such as it is. And but others, okay, they've been magnetized to other schools and other paths. You know, many paths all lead to the single city, Philadelphia. But
yeah, absolutely. There are a lot of different in a sense, a school has a lot of different manifestations or a bunch of different doorways. But you know, Silverdale, what I'm hearing there is the merit and the mm-hmm. grace is in the lifetime. Everybody who's hearing this tonight, everyone who's present here, everyone who's present in the network, everyone who's in this cosmos of our voices and sharing this tonight has obviously taken a rebirth, you know, taken a body, a human biological machine that has some degree of merit and grace because, you know, again, going back to one of your favorite books, Silverdale, I believe there's quite a bit of information in the human biological machine regarding the fact that the essential self is helpless or without resources to develop itself, to develop attention and presence and so on, to even get to a school. In other words, the human biological machine is the partner of that essence,
yes,
of that being.
That's right.
And it's the human biological machine that is going to get that being to the school. So this book 46 that Marvette just read, what I get out of that is that the being without qualities or characteristics in, you know, outside of time or outside mm-hmm. of this realm or this dimension chooses that lifetime, you know, chooses vehicle, because that vehicle, whether it's through Nova Scotia or France or Tucson, Arizona or whatever, arrives at this school. So that, you know, that's the choice that we've made. Hey, it's like, what, you know, is there any difference? Sure, sooner or later, which book was it this book or the Joy of Sacrifice where it says, EJ wrote that no soul is lost. So, I mean, after all, somewhere along the line, I mean, no soul is ever lost. But on the other hand, you know, this is like, if you want to get there in this lifetime, then this is the body that you needed to get there.
I mean, you know, here we are.
Yeah. What I was going to say is that's why, what's her name? who's the singer from Texas?
Singer from Texas?
Yeah, that you mentioned at the beginning. Yeah, that's why Janis Joplin said, you know, the rest of them all have Porsches, but she wants a Mercedes-Benz to make amends properly. It has to be the right vehicle.
You know, and by the way, I might just share, Gurdjieff, in his book, Meetings with Remarkable Men, describes an occasion in which he and one of his close friends were on top of a mountain, and with a shack. They were there all by themselves. He said, "Well, you know, we looked out over this vast valley and the gradual road up to the top of this mountain with this panoramic view, we saw nobody. Although in time we knew that that others might show. But for my friend and myself, we came straight up the straight face, you know, on the north side of the mountain, apparently with climbing ropes and stuff like that. So we achieved our journey very quickly to the top, but of course it was much more difficult than taking the gradual path up along the side of the mountain over many miles to get to the top. And in many ways, that's what we're doing in this particular school. We're trying to vertically ascend quickly, more or less, in one lifetime, as opposed to this gradual evolutionary process, which is going to happen to the whole of creation anyway over trillions of years.
Right. Right. We'll get there sooner or later. Every trilobite is going to get there.
I wanted to bring up at least one point, and maybe another. George mentioned the magnetic centrum,
yeah.
Magnetic center. And EJ is often, in his presentation to people, trying to give them opportunities to have interactions out there in the world with people in some way. Yeah, and that can be with art, with jewelry, with music, with just anything, you know, anything. It's just amazing the compendium of things he's offered to people that will either consider themselves a student or would like to just take advantage of the passing voyage through the school. That if they have the opportunity to take something that comes from a school that has some life to it, that gives them a boost for their own work to have the opportunity to possibly enliven that interaction. But he's mentioned more like you're just kind of planting seeds, and it doesn't have to be an active role. It can be a passive, just planting the seeds because they will do their own work.
When Ivan was talking, he said that, you know, everybody that's hearing us, the voice, is affected, right? And we are affected. All these people are affected. But when you were saying that, I realized I'm going to go out tomorrow and this particular class tonight, I'm going to carry it out into the world. I'm carrying the vibratory sensations of this moment that is put together because of everybody that's here and online and everything like that, and it's going to be, whether I understand it or not, shared with people throughout the day. They will get it. They'll get a little they'll get something from it. Because I'm able to carry it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And by the way, I just want to remind all of us again of the idea of disarming the chronic in order to allow the essential self to manifest.
Nice. Yeah. Well, I have to acknowledge that I've missed a bunch of books here. I've been out of touch with this discussion, but it seems to me now, in this moment, wherever I open up these books of the dead and start reading, there's this there's a reference to the recognition, the importance of recognition in this life. Not just in the bardo, not in the voyage, in the bardo voyage, but that in this life the guides are manifesting. These guides appear, turn up in your everyday life, and the practice to prepare for not just getting ground to bits in that Bardo voyage, is to practice that recognition over and over again. To be identifying or, yeah.
In some areas, they say that the second line of work is, the first line of work is work on self. And then they say the second line of work is work with friends, with groups.
Mm-hmm.
And
Sangha, yeah.
And I sit here and I look around, and this is my true family.
Yeah.
And the family characteristic isn't the physical manifestation, because I look out here and nobody looks like each other and nobody looks like me, but there's a familiarity here, because it's the familiarity of the essential self that I see exercised.
Exactly, yeah.
By these individuals. They emanate it. They're willing to emanate it. That's their first position. You know, like if we're doing ballet, that's your first position.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's also the source of that title of one of EJ's very early books, The You Look Somehow Familiar Forever.
And you do.
He was referring to a school, to the school apps.
And that's why, so we come together with the highest and best in mind, with great life together. We come together with, we're reminded of the higher by each other, and we bring the higher to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't, we wish not to violate.
Yeah, well, actually, yeah, I want to say, let me say one
yeah,
more thing.
Good.
Along the line of what Marvette was saying, you know, I heard Silverdale mention, well, you know, I'm far away from EJ, and so I'm less in the radiance or whatever. But, you know, what Marvette was talking about there, this teaching that we have to meet strangers, to go out in the marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the ways that EJ formulated that is to say that this is a teaching that comes alive in the transmission. And the fact is that that's, you know, that's one of the reasons that I'm here, is that, you know, I was convinced by actions that I took in Tucson, Arizona. I found that if I offered hospitality, if I created a space for a study circle where, you know, often people didn't come, nothing happened. Some people came and went, like Marvette said, some people passed through, and, you know, they maybe that's enough for them just to hear about the idea that there's a school or that somewhere in the distance, far off, something is happening. But, I mean, I actually experienced that by my effort to do, you know, without, out of ignorance, I mean, with very little experience or knowledge, I made efforts to transmit that teaching, and yeah, boy, I had evenings or moments where the thing came alive for me, and to me, I've always understood exactly what, that's how I've understood what EJ says when people say, what are your credentials, you know, what's your lineage, what are your credentials, and he says, oh, here's the practical work on self, you try these exercises, and if they work for you, those are my credentials. And that's, you know, that's the reason I came, like you said, physically, geographically,
right,
to this school, is because I tried some of these experiments, and yeah, sure
that's
enough,
right.
Guess what? This teaching came alive when I made the effort towards strangers, you know, towards people.
Apparent strangers.
Yeah, people who
yeah.
are looking for, you actually are looking through the, you're looking through the material world for the sparks, you know, for the other, for those people who are family, you know, actually, you know, the lost shard, the broken vessel, the sparks that need to be gathered together. You know, there are people out there who are your family, like Silverdale was saying, or actually like what Dan was saying.
I just wanted to make a comment that I witnessed, and I think that if people have that spark within them and they need to be fed, I witnessed EJ give his credentials over a weekend of a workshop to some people that we had never met. They had discovered brain power and were working with it avidly, but they wanted to, you know, they had, what is this place, you know?
Yeah.
So they came and for this workshop, and it was amazing. It was amazing to see the line of credentials as everything came to life as he delivered it. And it appeared that the people that, you know, instigated this, you know, that had the necessity, actually were able to eat from that table. Mm-hmm. It was a beautiful sight, really beautiful.
Yeah, then maybe.
And if we could ever release it on video, I would love to. But it would be many hours of an incredibly woven tapestry.
The other day I was thinking of the beauty, for me anyway, of the Hasidic Jew movement.
Mm-hmm.
Which their discipline is so high, and they live in under such discipline. They can go anywhere in the world. They can go from Brooklyn to France. They step into the Hasidic community, and it's exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same food,
right.
The same bathrooms, and the same cleanliness, and the same dishes. And I was always so impressed with that when I started reading and studying about this
mm-hmm.
group of people. But I feel the same way. Like right now, I know I can go to where Silverdale is and immediately pick up
mm-hmm.
the chain of conversation. There's a unity of being that isn't dependent on structure so much as the internal intent that has been uncovered.
Mm-hmm.
And thus we go about, and let's read that last paragraph again in the book, if you would.
This book?
Yeah, book 4. I mean,
book 12.
Verse
yeah.
4.
Verse 4. And by recognizing them, the guides. Okay?
Right. Yes.
And
yes.
By recognizing them, you shall attain your liberation. But he who becomes afraid of them attracts them to him, and they shall cast him down. And he who forgets the life in spirit shall be thrown down, and he shall be trod upon and torn to shreds, for he has forgotten the everlasting life in spirit.
And together we can remember that we remind ourselves of the everlasting life in spirit. And thus forms our friendship and our family.
I'm intrigued by the fact that the requirement, the password, if you like, is recognition. And if these forms are frightening, and so that if one reacts to the form, one is cast down. Whatever is being recognized is not the form.
So you're recognizing it's a part of consciousness. It's simply another manifestation of that. And the point is that when we work together, we remember this everlasting life.
Yeah,
that's what we remember. And if we keep remembering that, we won't forget it. And assault it in this manner,
mm-hmm.
and we'll rise above it, and we'll live again to seek a life that has merit and grace.
And I just want to remind us, the sermons at the back of the book describe all of this in real good detail.
And the sermons are yet to come. We'll see how we deal with it.
Oh, I thought you did this. You didn't do the sermons?
We didn't do all of them.
Oh, okay.
We did,
all right.
I think, 8 of them.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, so remember that last part of the last verse is what we take out into our life tomorrow. And remember this as you go about your day and you touch the people that you meet, because they're meant to touch you tomorrow. Okay? So thanks for coming. Oh,
White Seer says, very difficult path. Phew.
Yeah.
And Ellen Tisdale says, the only thing harder is not doing it.
Really.
Well, it's a shame if we don't do it.
Or, yeah.
And see, right now at this moment, sense the everlasting life within you. Right now, sense what it feels like. And then tomorrow, when you go about your day, the next time you go about your day, then get back, find a way back to that place and manifest from there.
Mm-hmm.
And then it becomes slightly less hard. Thank everybody for coming, and we'll look forward to seeing you next Wednesday. at 7 o'clock.
Good night.